is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We begin hour number two of the Lombardi Line. Of course, this program is brought to you by DraftKings. Appreciate everybody watching us on DraftKings TV. We do have an update that Stormy has found a plane, Michael, so you're going to get your host back tomorrow. She's going to be in transit getting back here to Las
Vegas. That'd be great, yeah.
We did want to update the poll question.
She's been stuck. I feel bad for her.
I did too.
She takes days off to work, you know?
Right?
When you take days off to work, it's always hard. I mean, poor girl doesn't get a day off. She's working, and then, you know, now and then you get travel. It's just so bad. Can you imagine not being able to get a plane back to Las Vegas? I mean, that just doesn't sound right, does it? It seems like every plane goes to Las Vegas.
It should be like nonstop to Vegas everywhere, at every airport in the country. But apparently there's some issues everywhere right now. So we're going to get Stormy back tomorrow. Poll questions up right now on your X account. And the simple question was, who's going to be the highest scoring team in the NFL? Cowboys did it last year. And I like how you said if the answer isn't listed, please post in the replies. Had some replies to that. But right now the Lions at plus 550. Getting a lot of the action here at 43.1%. Dolphins coming in second at 30.3%. Bills only 7.4%. Niners are 19.1%. I'll tip my hand. I voted Bills at 9-1. I think the demise of the Bills is going to be greatly exaggerated. And I think with their defense maybe taking a step down, you might even see more out of Josh Allen and have to carry this team really offensively. So that's where I count, cast my vote. Have you officially cast a vote?
I would say this. Well, no, I did not cast a vote yet, but I would say this. I think I just want to kind of help people along. Detroit, number one team in the National Football League last year in touchdowns per game, 3.5. So that sounds like a really good idea to make that bet. The problem with Detroit is, because they go for it so often on fourth down, and because you just don't know exactly what's going to happen. They were 30th in the National Football League in terms of going for it on fourth down, kicking field goals. They only try two field goals outside of 50 yards. Can you imagine that? They play inside a dome. And so, you know, they only try two out of 50. And so they are, you know, they're going to go for it on fourth down. They were just 50% on fourth down for as much as they do go for it. So they're giving up yards. You know, they were 32nd in field goal attempts last year, which that allows you that those points that you're passing up, because remember, 50% of the time you didn't convert the fourth down, even though everybody in the analytical community embraces you and loves you, that you're not taking 3 points because it's brilliant that you're not doing that, you know, then, you know, even though the game adds up points as we go along, it's not basketball. We don't get as many shots attempts as a three-pointer. You know, it's hard to bet them because they give away points.
I'm going to get those shirts printed. Take the points. I keep preaching it here in the network, especially early in games. I'm right there with you, Michael. We did have some storylines we talked a little bit about, and I just wanted to touch on them briefly. We talked about the sit-in for Jordan Love in Green Bay. He's going to be there. He's not going to do anything as he tries to work out a new deal. I don't know about what's going to happen with Tua down there in Miami as well. You mentioned a similar agent, so I wonder if it'll be similar strategies here for those quarterbacks.
Well, you have to get the team to acquiesce to it. Brian Gutekunst, the general manager of the Packers, came out today and has said that he's going to allow Love to sit in. I think once you allow players to sit in, you know, you're asking for it. Remember, you're either coaching it or allowing it to happen. I mean, I think this, if you don't want to come to camp and you don't want to do any of the work, you don't want to go on the field and do the work, then, you know, then what are we doing here? You know, you lead by example. Do you think Patrick Mahomes is not going to lead by example? Do you think Joe Burrow is not going to lead by example? I mean, that's what you're competing against. You're competing against the teams that have to. And if you're going to beat the Detroit Lions, look, you didn't win 25 games last year. This is a little bit of the erosion that comes from basketball. You have one good year or six good games. I mean, look, this is a team that struggled to beat the New York Giants in the Meadowlands. And I grant you that Love played better as the year went on, right? But when he had to throw it over 40 times per game, which he did in four games last year, they were 2-2. And what's really bad about his 40 pass attempt games is he only averaged 57% completion. So the more he throws, the less completions he gets. Now, look, I love their offense. They're the number two team in the National Football League in not allowing sacks per play, which is really important. And having Jacobs is going to help them. But this is a team built on run the football, be able to stay out of as many third downs as you can. And again, they got hampered by their field goal kicker too, so mm-hmm. they would have scored more points. But Love can't turn the ball over. And early in that three-game losing streak, if you go back and watch the Raider game, they were protecting Love from beating them.
That's fascinating, because I think you made a pretty interesting distinguishing characteristic from a GM's perspective and a player's perspective, which is maybe in Dallas, CeeDee Lamb might sit out. He might not be there at all. It looks like Dak Prescott's going to be there and see if they get a new deal done somewhere down the road, but he's going to be there. You're okay with that if a player decides to sit out to have those conversations, but the sit-in is not as good a deal, correct?
It's a distraction. You know, why aren't you there? You know, then every day people are going to ask about Love's contract. Whereas if he participates, he's not going to get hurt. He's just only going to get himself ready for the season. Nobody's going to touch him. He wears a goddamn red jersey. Nobody's going to get 10 miles near him. Right? So he's going to go out there. He's going to get all his reps. His arm's going to stay loose. He's going to throw the football. Right? And so he's going to go through it. Like, if I were Brian, I would have been on the phone with Dave Dunn, the agent. Like, this is ridiculous. He's not going to get hurt. Now, if you don't want to play in the preseason games because you're worried about injury, I get that. We're not going to play in the preseason games anyway. You know, we're not going to play. And if we have a team scrimmage, maybe we won't play in that either. But they're not going to get hurt there because the quarterback's off limits. So, like, tell me one quarterback that gets hurt in training camp that wouldn't be hurt whether he was working out. I mean, Burrow hurt his calf running around. I mean, that could have happened whether there were 11 guys on the field or 50 on the field. You can't predict that. So, like, what are we doing? You're just hurting the whole team. You're not helping our team. We need you to be a leader. Leaders don't stand on the sideline and watch.
Again, Arumph, I think that's exactly spot on. And I'll be interested to see how it plays out for a quarterback that we think is emerging. But maybe this seems like an odd way to prove your leadership here this year in Green Bay. I do want to get to what's on your mind today. And you talked about Patrick Mahomes. There's no way he would be pulling what Jordan Love potentially is pulling in Green Bay or Tua potentially down there in Miami. His approach to camp, Michael, this year, maybe a little bit different than years past. Take a listen.
This is my first year I'm bringing a TV. So I haven't brought a TV ever before, but NCAA came out, and I'm going to have to turn it on. So I brought a TV for NCAA and the Olympics. So that's my first year of doing that.
There it is, Michael. So when we get
we wrote about this tomorrow. We wrote about this tomorrow for the Daily Coach. And I think what you have to understand about what he's saying is he's a grinder. Right. There are certain level of players that what we call on the Daily Coach, we call it Grinder Island. Mm. There are certain guys that live on Grinder Island that block out all the distractions. Brady lived on Grinder Island. Peyton Manning lives on Grinder Island. Like, there's nothing that's going to happen in their life that keeps them away from trying to get better. I know a coach that went to that was at the Chiefs, a college coach who watched the Chiefs practices. Right. Mahomes took 90% of the reps. Mahomes led every single drill. That was Brady. You know, he's not the highest paid quarterback in the league. Mahomes isn't. He could be. He could demand to make $60 million. He could demand to make $65 million. Mm. But he's a teammate. He wants to win. He's a grinder. Like, he gains pleasure down the road. He doesn't need instant gratification. Like, I would be worried if I were the Packers and if I gave Love $50 million a year, what's that going to do to him? Because he's not on Grinder Island.
No, he's not. And again, we know this is the time of year, Michael, where we talked about a lot last year. We're going to talk about a lot this year. You get these clips that come out of camp and, you know, you're going to get excited. This is a time to get excited about your team. You look at this throw that we're showing you. This is to the rookie Xavier Worthy out of Texas. Of course, their first round draft pick. And you look at him as a speed guy. You see the players and their reaction, too. I know it's just camp, but when 15 does this, you see him sprinting around there, too. He's getting excited, right, Michael? I mean, the offense has been down in recent years. But
the defensive back – but in fairness, I mean, the DB guy just backed off the play. I mean, this is an incredible throw, rolling to his left, turning his body. But watch, the DB guy didn't even try to play the ball. He just, like, backed off of it. You know, look, they're in pat. But here's what I would say. They go to Missouri Western, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's old school. We had Brett Veach on. This Kansas City Chiefs team is old school. they're old school all the way. Like, they're going to practice hard. They're going to get stuff done. They're going to make sure that they get their football training in place. Their pad level is going to be good. This is what makes them so good off bye weeks. This is what makes them so good in the regular season in the opening game. Now, they lost last year to Detroit in the opening game, but the difference between Kansas City's preparation for the season is vastly different than Zach Taylor's preparation in Cincinnati. He's 0-4 the last 4 weeks going into the beginning of the season, right? The last 2 years, he's lost both first and second games of the year with Burrow. Now, Burrow wasn't healthy last year, so you can make an excuse there. But the Bengals are really not interested in playing great in September. At least Zach Taylor isn't. He's worried about playing great in December, and they're going to build to it. We'll see if it works out. But I think the Chiefs are always worried about playing great in September.
You know, the report was is literally seconds after beating the Niners to win those back-to-back Super Bowls, Mahomes looked at Chris Jones and said, "You're not going anywhere. Like, we're coming, we're like immediate in the moment of winning that Super Bowl, they're already thinking about a three-peat." Do you like that? That mental edge is like, like, right, this wasn't a month later. It was right there in that moment of winning that second straight Super Bowl. They're already thinking about the three-peat.
Well, that's because he's grinder. Grinders don't think about anything but keep grinding. That's all he knows. Yeah. That's all he wants to do. He wants to grind. He wants to be in there. He wants to lead the team. He wants to take the reps. You're never going to hear out of Pat Mahomes, "I got it," because he's going to take it.
Man, that's, when you start off with that guy 15, you got a shot every single year with that mentality. When we come back, Bucky Brooks is going to join the program, talk more about camp and what we expect to see this year in the NFL. That's next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The VSiN NFL betting guide is already out now, and our college football guide drops August 1st. So only VSiN Pro subscribers get all the tools to prep for the college and the NFL seasons. Our experts are going to provide profiles on every team with advanced stats, trends, and power ratings, plus best bets on futures and season win totals. Sign up before the end of July. Receive both guides and full VSiN Pro access to our daily Pro Picks, 24/7 video, our exclusive data like our betting splits all the way through the Super Bowl for an early bird discount price of just $175. The football special discount price expires on July 31st, so that will not last long. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up today. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Back alongside Michael Lombardi, Dave Ross here as we continue this edition of the Lombardi Line. And Michael, maybe some breaking news could be coming out of Green Bay. I don't know if they heard our conversation, Brian Gutekunst, the GM, and Jordan Love, but maybe this deal might get done sooner rather than later.
Apparently, they're very close to doing a deal, which is probably why the sit-ins are occurring. I'm sure he was there because there's language and details that need to get cleaned up. But I think within the next 48 hours, we're going to have a deal, which makes sense for the sit-in. So, you know, I think to me, if they were far apart and he was sitting in, I think it would have been a problem. But obviously now they're very close to a deal.
With that information, let's bring back to the program. Bucky Brooks does a great job on the NFL Network. And of course, you can catch him on X at Bucky Brooks. Bucky, it's great to have you back in the program here on the Progressive Guest Line. Let's start right there. As Michael detailed, the sit-in is a little bit different these days, I'm sure, from when you're playing days. It was always just sit-outs, and this is kind of a new thing here. It looks like that deal is imminent here. Is that okay then to allow the player to show up even though he wants a new deal?
Michael comes from the old school like I do. Like, this is kind of crazy because, like, part of having the hammer when you're the team is to be able to yield the hammer. And so you want players to come in, but when you come in, you're supposed to work. Like, there are things in the CBA that prevent you from holding out. And so you're kind of letting the player off the hook by allowing him to have the sit-in. Yes, you want him around, but if he's around, he should be working. I understand that you don't want him, or he doesn't want to kind of put himself at risk. But when the deal is done, the deal is done. And so he has to make a determination. If he's going to come, he has to come and work. If not, I don't really know why they let guys off the hook when it comes to that.
Yeah, me either, Bucky. I mean, look, there's a lot of teeth in that CBA, and if you're just going to let guys not get fined, part of the deal is, you know, if you don't give a player his per diem, $50 a day or whatever the hell it was, they go berserk. So the threat of being fined $1,000 or $10,000 a day, yeah, that's leverage, right? On that team bus. My per diem check, what's my cash, what's, you know, so like, would you just let that get away? I mean, it's ridiculous. But let's talk about the Packers for a second. Last year, their run defense was, to be polite, atrocious. In four games, they gave up over 200 yards rushing. They lost all four, right? Like, where do you see the effect of Jeff Hafley defensively? And how good do you think Jordan Love can be?
So I think Jeff Hafley comes over, and I think his experience in college will certainly help him with the team that the Packers have in place. When you look at the Packers, they've been a team that is a homegrown team. They draft and develop really well, but maybe they haven't maximized the talent that they have. They got a bunch of first rounders on that defense. They got to find a way to get Luka Van Ness and some of these young guys playing well. Coming from college, where you kind of have to like kind of coach up what shows up in a way, I think Hafley will have a better approach when it comes to getting those guys to play and to play really, really fast. If he can get that defense, look, to just play middle of the pack defense, to be able to play what should be elite, because Jordan Love and the offense should be even better, I think they have a chance. Now, as it relates to Jordan Love, there's a lot of excitement about Jordan Love because of the way he closed to finish the regular season. He did a really good job settling in. But what I am curious to see is, now that they have all that tape on them, and, you know, defensive coordinators and defensive players keep books on players that they face, what is his counter going to be to adjustments that he's faced very early in the year? Because what separates the good from the great is how they constantly adjust to the way that people play them. I want to see those first eight games. How does Jordan Love play against the way defensive coordinators play against him after they studied him the entire offseason? That's what will determine how good he really, really is.
Bucky, I'm fascinated by, you know, we're talking about these sit-ins and players potentially sitting out and the like. Then you got the Brandon Ayuk situation in San Francisco, where he's just straight up demanding trades, and he's on social media and he's very active. And like, I want out of this situation, although San Francisco still holds all the cards there. What do you think happens with John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan and Brandon Ayuk? Does this get worked out, or do you think they acquiesce and actually move him?
I think nothing happens. I think all this stuff that Brandon Ayuk is doing is great for us, but the San Francisco 49ers have shown they don't blink in these situations. And I'm going to be honest with you. Like, it was a conversation that I had early in the offseason. There's nothing that Brandon Ayuk can do. Like, he doesn't have any power. The CBA puts him on a fifth-year option. The Niners have two franchise tags that they can use after that. There's nothing that he can do. So he can pout, he can salt, he can do all of that. The Niners, as the Niners have been known to do, they'll turn their back and just be like, yeah, he's fine. He'll come to play when it's time to come play, because he has to show up. He doesn't have anything that can force his way out. So he has to come to grips that he's going to play for $14 million this year and whatever the franchise tag deems the next year, if the Niners don't want to do a negotiation.
I couldn't agree more. Like, it's really just because nobody understands that this isn't the NBA, Bucky. Like, people have this mentality that Brandon Ayuk has become James Harden. Like, he can demand from Daryl Morey a trade. Like, he got no leverage. You're laughing at him. And all it's doing is just filling out papers. I mean, the agent's just sitting there trying to create some stir. And everybody in the 49er building's laughing at them, because what are they going to get back that is going to be worthwhile for their Super Bowl run that's better than Brandon Ayuk? A first-round pick that you don't even know where it is in the draft? It's absurd. All right, let me put your GM hat on, and let me know. You know how I feel about Tua. You've listened to me rant about Tua, how, yes, he's good, he does some good things. But what do you think ends up happening with the Tua deal? Do you think they get it done?
I think eventually they get it done, because I think the people that drafted him are still obviously there. Chris Greer has a vested interest in making sure that his prize pupil is signed. But I think the money part of it is where you're going, because it's one thing to evaluate the numbers. It's another thing to evaluate the player. And what you're trying to assess is how much of it is the quarterback, how much of it is the weapons around him. And not to diminish anything that Tua has done, but, man, that is a world-class track team that's around him. And Tua does a great job of giving those guys the baton on the 4x1 relay. but how much are you willing to pay for that? Because if you pay two or too much, well, then you can't keep the track team together. You can't keep Jalen Waddle, Tyreek Hill, and all those guys happy if you overpay for the quarterback. So hopefully the quarterback realizes where he fits in the puzzle, and he takes, I won't say market value. So market value is going to put him in the $50 million club. But how much over that are you willing to pay to? Well, you know, you got to have all these other things right for him to play at his best.
Bucky, with the explosion of these contracts for quarterbacks, I wonder what's going to happen down in Big D, because we just went through this a couple years ago with Jerry and Dak. Dak got his money, and here we are again. Do you think Dak is content to wait till next year and say, sure, I'll play this out, this is fine, but it's going to cost you more in the back end? How do you think that plays out with Dak and Jerry?
I think for Dak, Dak is in the catbird seat. I think Dak knows that there hasn't been a quarterback like him to really get to the open market. So I think he's very comfortable playing, because the other thing is the fear factor that we all have on the outside. Well, what if he gets hurt? But Dak already has done that. He got hurt on a franchise tag and got his money. So he knows that regardless, he is going to get paid. So he can say, hey, man, I can push it off, because I know this. The price for top quarterbacks never goes down. So what is $55 million this year will be $65 million next year. And so the Cowboys have kind of let it get to the point where they have to figure out, do they want to draft one, or do they want to keep paying top-of-the-market prices for the quarterback? I don't think the deal gets done. I think this goes all the way through the regular season, and they part ways. Dak goes and gets a blockbuster deal on the open market, and the Cowboys figure out how to reset the franchise by finding a quarterback, either in the draft or one of those journeyman quarterbacks, to be the QB1 going forward.
Yeah. Well, do you think CeeDee Lamb gets done before the beginning of the season?
I think he has to. I think if they start to look at it, because we talk about maybe not paying the quarterback. Well, if you're not going to pay the quarterback, well, then you want to make sure that you kind of put everything in place for the next guy. CeeDee Lamb is their number one receiver. CeeDee Lamb is like kind of like the young perimeter playmaker that they have, because Brandon Cooks is over 30. Ezekiel Elliott is over 30. Like, they got to pay someone that's young that can be there for a round. He gets his money. I think that I've heard you talk about, like, trying to figure out the money. Is it $35 million that Justin Jefferson got, or is it $32 million? Trying to find the right spot for the market, because all the players want what the extension says, but everyone is like, no, that's an extension. That's not a new deal. We got to work off the right number to make sure that we get it done.
Bucky, love the perspective. Great stuff, as always. Thanks for joining us in the Progressive Guest Line. Can't wait for the season. Yeah, that's fantastic.
You, man. Hey, thanks so much for having me. Talk to you soon, Mike.
Great stuff, Michael. And now he made my heart sink a little bit there, saying this might be the last year for Dak in Dallas. Oh, but it really could be.
I mean, listening to Stephen Jones, I don't get that sense. I listen to him on a pod. I don't get that sense. I think you'll be all right.
More NFL talk next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're almost to that time of the year. When you check out VSiN.com, you're going to get a lot of articles each and every day about NFL training camps getting ready to go. So check it out every day to get your best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state. They're going to vary by state. Betting tools, betting guides. It's there for your perusal each and every day at VSiN.com. Back alongside RG, I'm Michael Lombardi. I'm Dave Ross. We continue this edition of the Lombardi Line, and let's get to those burning training camp questions, Michael, that we have out there. And the first one is one that we've touched on the show today, and it's weird. It's a motivation that we haven't seen play out very often. I know Patriots have done it back in yesteryear, going back to back, but that focus that they're going to need to have in order to go for a three-peat. Is that a distraction, or is that a good focus that it puts it into clarity? And no, we know exactly what we want to do. We want to make history.
Well, I think they've got a really good leader in Andy Reid. And part of managing expectations comes from the head coach. If you want to know how not to manage expectations, just spend time in Florham Park and talk to Robert Saleh. He'll explain to you exactly how not to do it. Meanwhile, if you watch Andy Reid, you'll know exactly how to do it, right? You embrace it. You run to it. Look, they've got a good team. And Coach Walsh would often tell you, and partly in his book, Finding the Winning Edge is a whole section on what to do with a good team. And a good team is you just continue to raise the bar, that you have to continue to work to improve. And there, you know, there's going to be ups and downs during any part of the season, because that's just what teams do. We went 15-1 my first year in the National Football League, and we had ups and downs. Won a very close game against Houston in the Astrodome that year. Dwight Clark made a sensational one-handed catch, and Houston wasn't a good team at that time. Mm. And yet we overcame it. And so you've got to manage expectations, and you've got to keep everybody hungry. It's easier, though, when your best player is a grinder, when your best player's out there taking all the reps, when your best player's out there wants to practice, wants to get better, loves the environment, loves going to St. Joseph's, Missouri in the horrible heat, staying in some college dorm room. I mean, here's a guy who makes $50 million a year, and he's sleeping in a bunk bed. I mean, come on. You got to love it to do it.
Speaking of love, and this is certainly a burning question in training camp in Green Bay for the Packers, but it does feel like, as you mentioned earlier, that maybe this deal with Jordan Love is imminent now. Is that once that gets done, that goes away, does the focus then go back to the defense and kind of resurrecting that with a new defensive coordinator this year?
No question it does. It goes right back to the defense, but also goes to the offense, right?
Yeah, and again, we'll get reconnected with Michael there in a second. That's the biggest part of the issue here for the Packers, is once this Jordan Love deal gets done, and as Michael mentioned earlier in the program, it does feel like it's imminent. For those that don't know, obviously Jordan Love is there at training camp. They're calling it a sit-in, and that's because they believe his agent and Brian Gutekunst, the GM, are very, very close to a deal. And as Michael mentioned earlier in the program, if they were not close to a deal, this would be a distraction. If you've got a disgruntled guy, a disgruntled employee showing up at work, that's not going to help out the other guys. So, Michael, again, it looks like the defense will, once they get this deal done, the issue then will turn to the defense. And look, whether or not, you know, you could scapegoat the old DC, you got Jeff Hafley's in there now as the new defensive coordinator this year. They're going to look to get better on the defensive side of the ball, because I think everybody around the Packers last year looked at the defense as the main problem on that roster. I will say this. They played really good defense down the stretch last year in turning that season around and getting into the postseason, and really should have beaten San Francisco. I hope we haven't all forgotten that game. And while they blew out Dallas and everybody looked at the offense, their defense shut down and picked off Dak Prescott a bunch of times too. So their defense was playing better. They did make the change to Jeff Hafley this year. So we'll see if it works out for Green Bay this year, and that defense can play a little bit better. I'm fascinated by what the Buffalo Bills might look like this year as we continue with our training camp burning questions. And Sean McDermott is known as a defensive guru. At least that's why he got the job initially many moons ago in Buffalo. But now you've got a brand new back four in Buffalo. I'll be fascinated to see what it looks like, because I think we always looked at it and you could count on the Jordan Poyers of the world, and those guys are long gone. And Brandon Bean is a GM that I think has been highly regarded in years past. But if this year, and it is reflected in the betting market, I think people are anticipating a step back for Buffalo this year. And if that happens, I wonder if this might be the end of the Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott, you know, coexistence here in Buffalo. And not saying that, you know, if one goes, they both go. But that normally is the case. You know, GMs hire their coach. If the GM goes, normally that means the coach is going to be gone as well. So, Michael, I believe we have you back here. Let's stay on the Bills conversation for a moment. And you know how this works. If Buffalo does take a dramatic step back, do you think it's a clean house scenario? Like, do Sean McDermott, Brandon Bean, do they feel that pressure this year that they better get something done and at least keep the expectation at level high in Buffalo?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the window's there for them, right? I mean, they have not overcome the 13 seconds, no matter what's happened. Mm. Leslie Frazier's left. They changed defensive coordinators. Bobby Babich is now the defense coordinator. They fired Ken Dorsey after Brian Daboll left. So they've been rearranging the coaching staff. Eventually, it's going to look Sean McDermott in the eye and say, what about you? In those 13 seconds, I mean, Bass misses the 44-yard field goal. They have first and 10 inside the Chiefs' red zone or just outside of it. They can't get any yards, and they settle for a field goal.
which if you watch the first quarter of that game, the first field goal they made was in exactly the same direction from 27 yards out. They barely made that because of the wind moving the ball around. So, yeah, I think this is a big year for them, and particularly defensively, right? They lose their two cornerstone players, which were Pryor and Hyde, in the secondary. They got everybody lined up. They made the checks. They put the game plan in play. Everybody understood what was happening. Now they've lost both those guys. And how good are they on the defensive front? I mean, let's face it. Von Miller has done nothing for this franchise. I mean, he made three tackles last year, did not have a quarterback pressure, and didn't have a sack. You know, so like those are serious, serious elements that, you know, it's hard to overcome when you don't get that going. And so I think for Buffalo, I think that's really the time. And if you're not going to blame, the players, then eventually the coach gets in there. And so, you know, look, we know that Josh Allen has to lower his interception percentage. It was a 3.5, the highest it was in his career. So he's got to take care of that. But I think the real question is, can they play good enough on defense against good run teams?
Michael, I'm fascinated when you look at a guy like Dave Canales, year one in Carolina. He's kind of known now as the guy that resurrects quarterbacks, right? Maybe Geno Smith, and then we saw with Baker Mayfield in Tampa last year. Is it already time for that conversation with Bryce Young? Like year two, are we already getting desperate that Canales has got to be the savior here and resurrected for Bryce Young?
You know what's funny about Canales, Dave? You say that when he was with Pete Carroll, he came to Seattle when Pete came to Seattle. He was a strength coach, and Pete kept hiring offensive coaches over Canales. The reason he went to Tampa was because Pete wouldn't promote him to become the offensive coordinator there. So he's had one good year coaching a quarterback, and he got a head coaching job. God bless him. That's tremendous, right? And I think, to me, the key to Bryce Young is going to be, can they protect him? I mean, 13 games last year, they scored less than 20 points. In 11 games, they scored less than 16 points. I mean, Canales is going to do better than that just because it's impossible not to, right?
Yeah.
It's impossible not to. Now, they've got Miles Sanders, Chuba Hubbard. They put Jonathan Brooks on PUP because he came in injured. I mean, that's a crowded backfield. Somebody's going to get traded back there. And if they can run the football and take some of the pressure off of Bryce Young, I mean, the guy averaged 5.5 yards per attempt last year. It was horrendous.
I look at the Browns. They, by the way, moved out to be a 2-point favorite now week one against the Cowboys. I almost look at them, and I got Stefanski coach of the year last year. I get it with all the different quarterbacks they had to play. They're going to go back to Deshaun Watson. Who's Deshaun Watson at this stage of his career, Michael? Can you answer that?
Well, I don't know the answer to that. I don't think Deshaun Watson does, because maybe Will Fuller's the only one who does know that, right? I mean, in 12 games in his Cleveland Brown career, he's averaged 6.5 yards per attempt, 14 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. I mean, in 2020, when he was with Houston, he had a 54.5 success ratio, 55.4. In 23, he's down to 38.3.
Oof.
And I think this is going to be one of the worst contracts of all time. Think about this for just a second. Flacco played in one less game. He averaged 7.9 yards per attempt. He threw for 1,616 yards. Watson, in six games, threw for 1,115 yards.
Wow. Maybe the worst contract of all time. You're not lying, that's for sure. Michael, when we come back here to wrap up this edition of the Lombardi Line, I do want to update the poll question that we had out today. And again, you still have a little bit of time here, America, to vote. It is a simple question. Which team is going to score the most points this year? Remember, the Cowboys did it last year. We'll show you those numbers that are associated with it. I know the Cowboys are around 10-1 to repeat as the best offense in the NFL. Come on back. We'll put a finishing bow on this edition of the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
July is ending with a bang. UFC 304 has not one, but two title fights on tap on Saturday night. So get your own crown by jumping in on all the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the UFC. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use the code VSIN, that's V-S-I-N, for new customers. Get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5, only on DraftKings. And the crown can be all yours. crown right now still is on the head of Leon Rocky Edwards. Bilal Muhammad, about a 215 betting underdog, is going to try to dethrone him in Manchester, England. Back on side, Michael Lombardi. Michael, we are going to update the poll question. It was a good one today. Which team will be the NFL's highest scoring offense this regular season? And I think you put out some pretty good caveats. Hopefully you've been watching and listening people out here in the last couple hours. That I know the Lions are the team that's going to take this money today in the poll question at plus 550. But you made a great point about Dan Campbell, that sometimes he leaves some points on the field, right?
Yeah, no question. I mean, he's 32nd in the league in attempting field goals, only tried two outside of 50. You know, considering they play in a dome, you would think they would have great range on kicks. The other thing you have to be concerned about is their defensive ability to turn the ball over, right? I think Thomas Gable made this point in the first hour of the show, is can you turn the ball over? And you need to score with your defense. One of the reasons Dallas scored over 500 points last year was because their defense, Bland got five touchdowns alone. That's 35 points. You know, that's 35 points right there. Think about it, you know? And so when you do that, whereas Detroit, because they lack team speed, you know, one of the things I think for fans to look at, you know, you have to always consider when you're looking at teams, when you want to evaluate team speed, one of the ways we would do it in the National Football League was how many fumbles do they recover? How many do they force and how many do they recover? It's a really important stat. Why is that? Okay, because fumbles are because of basically Einstein's theory of mass, volume and mass come together and it creates collisions that are high intensity, right? So 16 fumbles that were created last year, less than one a game, only recovered seven of those. So they're not making a lot of plays in that area, right? And I think that's the big concern. So they only recovered seven fumbles. Now they did get 16 interceptions, but still, you know, when you can't get those plays, you can't get the ball out with great field position, it's harder and harder to score. So I think ultimately that's why I would be concerned about it. Look, they scored 461 points, and I promise you, they left points on the field.
Yeah, totally agree with that. So again, the Lions plus 550 are going to take the money today on that poll question. I found this story to be fascinating over the weekend. I'm a big John Harbaugh and Jim Harbaugh fan, be perfectly blunt. And, you know, in conversations with John in years past, he's a guy that never really gets that animated. You know that very well, Michael. Pretty level-headed guy. And certainly he's a made man in Baltimore these days. But he did feel the need to defend Lamar Jackson, who is the reigning and now two-time league MVP. And here's what John had to say about the Great Eight.
There's a lot of great things said about Lamar. But there's a lot of stuff that said to you, you got to just scratch your head about and kind of wonder, what's that person even thinking, you know? So, but we take it personally. And the vision that we have together is that Lamar Jackson is going to become and be known and be recognized as the greatest quarterback ever to play in the history of the National Football League. That's the vision, all right? It's going to happen by Lamar, his work ethic, and his brilliant talent, by all of us pouring into that effort together as a team, teamwork, and by the grace of God and God's goodwill. That's how it's going to happen. And I believe it like we've already seen.
That's the thing. And you know this, the Harbaughs, you know, when they say stuff, it might sound hyperbolic. They believe it, whether it's true or not is a different thing. But he believes that he's can be the greatest quarterback of all time. What do you make of those comments from John? It seems a little odd here in July.
Well, I mean, I think, look, Lamar is certainly a dynamic talent. And I think what John's saying to you, if you want to read between the lines, is we haven't done the things we need for him to do come playoff time. I mean, they've lost home playoff games. They've lost to Tennessee, comes in there. And last year, you know, Kansas City comes in there. And frankly, they didn't give Kansas City as good a game as Buffalo did. I mean, Buffalo gave him a really good game, and Buffalo should have beaten him, could have beaten him, let's say that. Whereas they panicked. Baltimore has panicked. Now, I love Lamar, and I've always loved Lamar. I mean, Bill Polian thought he was a wide receiver coming out. Bill Polian's in the Hall of Fame. So there shows you the disconnect between what some people thought of him and where he is. I thought he was always going to be a quarterback. I've always felt like the Ravens have not done the things for him that are conducive to him. They keep thinking adding receivers is going to make him better when Lamar throws the ball in the middle of the field as well as anybody. And if they keep trying to throw it outside the numbers, that's not his game. You know, you're asking him to do things he's not great at doing. Now with Henry, where they have to be in pistol, you cannot be an offset shotgun with Derrick Henry. Mm. He's not that back. He needs to be deep into the I formation to get some momentum going. And if they're going to utilize him in that area, I think it opens up the door for Lamar to be a better bootleg and naked quarterback to use his feet as a threat to run and his arm to make plays like he did when he hit Zay Flowers for the touchdown against the Chiefs.
You know, back in the day, Aaron Rodgers used to do a lot of that boot action early in his career when he was more nimble on his feet and certainly had the legs to do it. We know he's coming off a devastating Achilles injury, first series of last year. He's going to be back for the Jets. But what he doesn't know is if this is going to be the swan song. And he said, quote, I don't know. I'm not sure. He said this one for sure this season. I wanted to do two good ones to give us a chance to retire a Jet and win two Super Bowls. Does that say to you that this is a guy that really says, Michael, get inside Aaron Rodgers' head, good luck, that this is it? This is my last year?
I think to me it comes back to we just never know what he's going to do, right? I think it's always a concern about where can he come back. Remember, one of the things that we have a hard time with is our memories. It tends to wane on us no matter how old you are, right? Mm-hmm. And the memory we have of Aaron Rodgers is MVP Aaron Rodgers, not last year in Green Bay Aaron Rodgers, because that wasn't very good. That was not very good. And you can say it was he lacked receivers. You could make 1,000 excuses. Now, I think with the Jets, with Garrett Wilson being so good and if they can hold up in the line, but there's so many ifs. Is Mike Williams going to be able to even come back to the player that he once was? That remains to be seen.
Totally agree. It's always a soap opera. If this is it, it's a Hall of Fame career. It'll be interesting to see how it goes up. But to retire as a Jet, that seemed odd to me. You know, every year in D.C., I would have Lorenzo Alexander.
You know, people say that, though, Dave. People say that retire as a Jet. Do you realize that the Hall of Fame, it's not like baseball where you retire as a player. You go in as an NFL, you go in as a player. You don't go in as a team, part of the team. Retire as a Jet.
He's not picking his helmet. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's pure Rodgers. In D.C., I would ask Lorenzo Alexander every year this time of year, hey, does this feel different, right? And he'd say, finally, like after year eight, he's like, no. Like we say the same stuff every year and nothing ever changes but the dates in the calendar, right? Jalen Johnson kind of had a similar response in Chicago this year. And he said this, and I'll quote him. He said, I'm tired of just having upside and having potential. That's what he told the Chicago Sun-Times. I want to be in a position where we actually go out there and we are that and not just what we're projected to be. It's about action at this point. Oh, music to my ears. I mean, Michael, that would give me more hope as a Bears fan versus this false hope of like, no, just this year somehow is going to be different. Do you like that when a player says stuff like that?
I think it's important, right? And especially a leader. A guy just got paid his contract, you know, and he's ready to go out there and try to lead this team. But I think the biggest question mark is, look, you can't run the ball in the Bears. Their eight-man front's very good. It's a better eight-man front than what Indianapolis does. Indianapolis, you can run the ball on them. But this Bear front is harder to run the ball on. The difference is they both struggle to stop the forward pass. And, you know, when Montez Sweat comes in midseason and still leads your team in sacks, do you have enough pass rush to affect the opposing quarterbacks? And the one thing we do know is when they played Detroit, it was a bad day. They won that game handily. Detroit didn't handle the weather. But can they go against good quarterbacks and win? That's going to be the question. Remember, they gave up a ton of points to the Denver Broncos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did. And again, I think Eberflus, your point, the defense has gotten better. He took over for Alan Williams with what happened there last year. The defense did get better. I know all eyes are always going to be on Caleb Williams, and he's number one pick in the draft, so we all get that. But it really does feel like kind of like the Kansas City method. You know, maybe the defense leads them a little bit, and the offense plays catch up. Michael, always enjoy the conversations, and cannot wait for camp to get started. And I'm sure you're going to get Stormy back tomorrow. Looks like the planes are going to be operational here and get her back to Vegas. But I enjoy the 2 hours, my friend.
Thank you, David. Appreciate you coming in. Great work. Thank you so much.
Anytime. Thanks to Elliot Bowman, everybody behind the glass here at VSiN. We'll see you next time here on the Lombardi Line.